Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by A Wrestling Historian. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram for your latest dose of pro wrestling history. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
And welcome to the latest podcast. I am your host, JP John Paz. And of course, joining me is the former writer, head writer for the WWF and WCW, the former WCW World Heavyweight Champion, Mr. Vince Russo. Vince, how you doing?
What is going on, John? How are you doing, bro?
Doing good. Can't complain. So right off the top, we'll just get this out of the way. A question from Larry. I'm not sure if he's trying to get you or me in trouble with this one, but he wanted to know about Blackface Goldust. So I'm not really sure if you remember that, but it was on Raw. I guess it was somewhere around late 97, early 98, and he did the complete blackface Goldust gimmick. Do you remember this at all? Whose idea was anything?
Bro,
about it?
Or whatever, however Goldust did his face that week was 1,000% him. I never knew how he was going to do his face. There was no direction for how he'd do his face. I just guess from a creative point of view, you know, every show, Dustin would just put on his makeup the way he wanted to put on his makeup. Nobody else ever had anything to do with that. That was always him, regardless of what it was.
Do you adjust your writing to whatever he's dressing up as?
No, of course not. Okay. No, the show's written. You know, he gets ready for the show. He puts on his gear and, you know, whatever makeup he feels like putting on that day, that's what he did. Obviously back then, you know, if he came out in blackface or something like that, just like, you know, Piper, and I guess it was WrestleMania 3. Back then it isn't.
WrestleMania 6, whatever.
But back then, bro, it isn't what it is today. So, like, quite frankly, if he came out in like complete blackface or whatever, bro, I wouldn't have even noticed, because every single week he wore his makeup differently.
It was nothing. Nobody even blinked an eye. I remember Triple H did. Like, nobody, Road Dogg did.
Those
nobody
guys
even
too,
an eye.
Bro. Those guys too. When they did that spoof of
the nation,
that was all them. That was all them. You know, whatever they decided to do creatively, that was them. I just basically, you know, the creative was, you guys are going to spoof the nation. And then they went back and got together and did all of that on their own. And, you know, that was it.
When that happens and you know, you're writing it, obviously nobody's batting an eye. They just do it. Do you do anything to play it up or play it down, or it, like, whatever's written, that's what you're doing. I don't care what, you know, how you're dressed, Goldust.
Yeah, exactly. Like, here's the creative. This is what we're doing. And I'm going to, you know, let you guys use your own creativity of how you're going to do this. I mean, basically, that's it. I mean, there are no specific details down to the T. I mean, nothing like that at all, especially with Goldust.
It's funny. It's not controversial back then, although Goldust was controversial just because he was wacky and weird and did all this crazy stuff.
But
now people like go back like, oh, I can't believe he did that. And stuff like that. So I wanted to mention this because I was kind of a little perplexed by it, but his opinion is his opinion, but you were all over the news with a few different guys, but I wanted to talk about Booker T first. I just thought that was interesting because you booked him to be world champion, right? It's almost like the Lance Storm thing. You booked him the best he ever was booked in his career, but then he kind of badmouthed you. Right. I feel like Booker T was almost doing the same thing, almost unsolicited. I just thought that was weird.
Oh, it was 100%. It was, bro, you got to understand, man. When I do my shows, John, I don't talk about people. Okay. The only people I am really, really, really hard on are the dirt sheet writers because they're full of shit. Okay. So yes, bro, I am all over them. But when you're talking about colleagues and people I worked with, and you know, people, you know, currently now, bro, whether they were friends or foes, I never ever have anything negative to say about anybody. And even when they make remarks like this, I don't have anything negative to say. I try to understand why they made the remarks. And you know, the thing with Booker is that there were a couple of them. So like, I don't know exactly which one you are talking about per se, but he made a couple of comments like, you know, bro, somebody asked me what advice would I give young people that want to break into the wrestling business? And my answer was, you know, with good conscience, I wouldn't advise them to get into the wrestling business based on my experiences. You know, if my own kids wanted to get into the wrestling business with a good conscience, I wouldn't be able to tell them, yeah, I think that's a good idea. And Booker somehow, some way turned that into me being bitter. It's got nothing to do with me being bitter, bro. Like, man, if you worked in the restaurant business and you didn't like the restaurant business and you recommended somebody doesn't get in on the, it has nothing to do with being bitter, because bro, here's the difference. Booker has a wrestling school. So of course Booker doesn't like me saying that because he wants kids to go to his wrestling school. But bro, when I look back, what do I think of, bro? I think of China. I think of Daphne. I think of Tammy Sitch. I think of the poor girl who went overseas and hell happened to her, Ashley Mazzaro. These are the people I think of, bro. That's what immediately comes to my mind. I know people that the wrestling business has literally killed. I know that. So like, that's the way I look at it, that it's not all it's hopped up to be. And I would not recommend anybody get into it, but to take that as me being bitter. And then he had the comment, I think, you know, he called me hypocritical.
Yeah.
Because I guess what he's trying to say is I still make money off the wrestling business, but yet I negatively talk about it. Bro, I'm a freaking critic. So if I watch a wrestling show and there is something bad or something I don't like, in my opinion, I'm going to say it. So because you know, we do shows like this and I still talk about wrestling, I'm a hypocrite if I say something negative about it. And that's all wacky to me. And I got to tell you, John, I don't believe in the I make money off of wrestling. That is absolute bullshit, bro. I make money off of Vince Russo because, John, here's the bottom line. You and I know this. Bro, there are 1,000 wrestling podcasts out there. 1,000. Everybody's got a wrestling podcast. Every dirt sheet guy, everybody in the business, you, me. Bro, who are the people, who are you choosing to listen to or pay to listen to? You're choosing to listen to the person that you like. So John Paz has an audience. Vince Russo has an audience. Stevie Ray has an audience. X-Pac has an audience. They're paying for you because they like you. It's got nothing to do with wrestling, bro. If they wanted a wrestling podcast, there's a million other places they could go. So this BS about I'm still making money off of wrestling. Nobody in wrestling sending me a check. I'm not working for any wrestling company out there. I'm working for me. And when people subscribe to Russo's brand, they're subscribing because of me. They can go get wrestling any way they want. So the idea of me still making money off of the business and then I'm a hypocrite if I say something negative, get the frig out of here, bro. Like, seriously. Bro, I am, listen, man, if you're in the business, if you're still currently in the business, bro, you're kissing the ass of the wrestling business. Period. End of story. I happen to be in a good position where I've carved out a niche. I make a good living for myself, and I don't have to sit here and kiss everybody's ass every single day. So if you're working in the business, bro, you're kissing the ass of the business. And I know that, and I understand that. But why everybody has to drag my name into everything when I sit here and the last week, Eric Bischoff, Booker T, and Jake the Snake Roberts, I said nothing about any of them. Nothing. Zero, bro. And even after they made their comments, I still didn't say anything negatively about them. So I don't know what it is with them. And, you know, the bottom line is, geez, bros, if you're making money off of my name by using my name, then freaking throw me a couple of shillings, bro. I mean, literally throw me some money if you're constantly going to keep bringing up my name to freaking put money in your pocket, because I'm not talking about them.
Bischoff, I would kind of expect, just because you guys have a history together, but Booker was kind of out of nowhere. And Jake the Snake, I was shocked. I don't know why did he say anything?
Bro was trying to get over with the cool kids. That's why. Bro, Jake knows the internet wrestling marks and the dirt sheet writers and the AEW audience. He knows they hate Vince Russo. I never worked with it. Bro, I worked with the dude a day here and a day there, John, because every time I worked with Jake, he was gone the next day. So I literally only work with him a couple of days. Bro, that dude has no idea what Vince Russo wrote and didn't write. He's got no idea in the freaking world. But of course, when my name is brought up, to get over with the cool kids, to get in good with AEW, what am I going to do, bro? I'm going to insult Vince Russo. And my question to that is, it's like, bro, like, are you going to be doing that into your 70s? Is that what you're really going to be doing, bro, as you get towards the end of your life? These are the things that you're going to be doing because you still want a spot in the wrestling business? To me, bro, that's just freaking sad.
Yeah, that was I don't know if he was asked a question about you or whatever, but that seemed like it was out of nowhere.
He was asked a question, should Vince Russo be in the Hall of Fame? And he laughed and said, F no. First of all, bro, I've said a million times, I would never want to be in the Hall of Fame. I've got no freaking interest in that. I don't need the approval of Vince McMahon at this point in my life. It would mean nothing to me because there's so many great people out there that have since died that have never put into the Hall of Fame because they have whatever they have with Vince McMahon. It's a joke and it's a sham. So for him to say, oh, F no, he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Like, I give a shit about the Hall of Fame to begin with?
Yeah, interesting question. Just, they don't obviously put writers in the Hall of Fame, do they? I don't, as far as I know.
No, I mean, bro, I've made it clear. First of all, it would never happen. Second of all, I would never accept it because I'm not interested in it, bro. Now, if you're talking to me about, hey, Vince, would you like to see a Ivan Koloff or a Bundy or a Steve Demolition. Lombardi going to, yes, put them in the Hall of Fame. Absolutely. Yes. Because I know that would mean a lot to their families and to them. But as far as I'm concerned, first of all, bro, there is no Hall of Fame. Like, where do I go to the WWE Hall of Fame? Where is that, bro? Is that in Canton, Ohio? Where the frig is that? There is no Hall of Fame, bro. So it's just a show. It's just another show for the WWE to sell to the USA Network. That's all it is, bro.
Yeah, there's not a physical Hall of Fame. I know there was rumors of one, but there's not a physical Hall of Fame. Yeah, there should be one, but there isn't.
No, not of all.
And there's no real qualifications either that has ever been put out there.
If Vince McMahon liked you or not.
Yeah. And whatever
that's
he's
really,
feeling.
That's really what it comes down to, bro.
That particular month or whatever, you know, whatever.
Exactly. Exactly, bro.
Yeah, it's crazy. Some of the guys that aren't in. And Bundy, Bigelow, Demolition. Man, it's crazy. Ivan Koloff, it's crazy. Who's not in the Hall
of Fame? Right. Of course. So you think I care about myself? Like, give me a freaking... But that's Jake getting over with the cool kids, bro. Maybe Tony Khan will see that and give him another run in AEW. Who knows, bro? But, like, I'm so over these people, bro, that are still in the business and are still kissing the business ass. And when somebody is outspoken and says negative things about the business, then they are immediately attacked.
It does seem like an easy thing. Just make fun of Russo, get over with the certain segment of the niche fan base, for sure.
Exactly. I mean, bro, think about what Bischoff said. Vince Russo is fixable. Bro, part of the reason the guy lost his job was because of me. WCW was kicking the WWE's ass, bro, 83 weeks in a row, and then Vince made me the head writer. So... a complete turnaround, and Eric Bischoff lost his job. So if I was the guy that was responsible for that and I'm fixable, then what is he? Like seriously, bro, then what are you? I came in and I kicked your backside, bro. So if I'm fixable, like if – bro, we set record numbers that have never been approached and never will be. So you're telling me while I was doing that, I was broken? So, like, if I'm fixable, what are you? That's what I mean, bro. It's shit like that, like, and like I say, John, I never talk about these people. I don't talk about Cornette. I don't talk about any of these people, bro. I talk about people with me want to know. They want to know two things. They want to know, number one, what's your opinion of the current product? That's what they want to know. And number two, they want to reminisce and talk about the Attitude Era. That's all they want. That's what they want from me, and that's what I give them. I don't sit here and I don't, you know, constantly, just crap on people and degrade people and cut people down. That's not my freaking thing. Like I said, outside of the dirt sheet writers. Because these freaking guys, bro, like, the fact that they believe and think that they are actually in the business when they have no clue, bro, to what it is to actually be in the business, but they really think they're a part of it. I just think at that point, somebody needs to put them in their place.
Interesting. As we're recording today, 26 years ago was the quote unquote birth of the Attitude Era, or a lot of people say it was because of that Vince McMahon, a little 2 minute or so backstage promo that he cut saying the cure for the common show. Remember that
bro, he was talking about Vince Russo. That's exactly who he 100% was talking about. We're no longer going to be this. We're now going to be this. And like I said, bro, it's so stupid to me because again, bro, you're never going to be able to erase those numbers, but yet you're going to continue to take shots at me. Like it's so idiotic. If I would have fell flat on my face and the numbers would have continued to go down to 1 million people or whatever, absolutely you tear me apart and bury me and I was horrible and this and that. But I mean, my God, bro, you're taking the shots at the guy that, you know, literally wrote and produced the highest ratings in the history of the business. It's ridiculous, bro. It's like freaking, you know, it's like taking a shot at, you know, oh, Stephen King writes horrible horror novels. Like really, bro? Come on.
Do you love that Vince promo? Because, I mean, that's...
I loved it.
Because that's like him really coming out of his shell there, showing you the real Vince, taking a shot at Hogan. Remember, he says, there's no more superheroes. Take your vitamins and say your prayers. Obviously, shot at Hogan. Yep. He's like, those days are over. He goes, there's no such thing as good guys and bad guys. Like,
yeah, it was great. It was great.
That was
bro.
Like his coming out party. Him, that and him making fun of Bret Screwed Bret. That was like his slowly becoming Mr. McMahon, who we all know and love. Yeah.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Or know and hate, depending on, on who you are.
Right.
But that was almost like, wow, this guy is such a prick. You know what I mean? It was the perfect thing for the attitude era. You guys needed the perfect villain.
Yep, absolutely, bro. Absolutely.
Now, the topic at hand today, of course, Attitude Era, which, like you said, people love to reminisce about the Attitude Era, and that's what we'll do today. Judgment Day in Your House, 1998, October 18th, 98, from the Rosemont Horizon in Rosemont, Illinois. The attendance, 18,153. So packed house, 305,000 pay-per-view buys. So nice big pay-per-view buys for kind of a B show, you would say. I mean, it's not one of the big four. So over 300K. I mean, that's pretty good for a pay-per-view, considering WCW is also having a pay-per-view and having a big pay-per-view this month as well. So pretty good number there here in 98. And obviously they had Hogan versus Warrior, Halloween Havoc 98. They did, I think they did around 500,000 buys, but that was literally, that was the thing. And then they fell off the cliff. You guys are going here and going nothing but up. You guys are building. Right. Them having Warrior show up and doing the pay-per-view with Hogan, do you even think about that, care about that, or no?
No, not at all, bro. No, I am just concentrated and centered on our show. So, no, not at all.
Any sort of relationship with Warrior at this point? Because I know you were friendly with him, but are you still talking to him in 98?
No, no, we kind of lost touch a little there, bro, during that time. So, yeah, I was not in contact with him when he was working at WCW. I tried to get him back into WCW when I went there, but I was not in contact with him during this time, no.
Him and Hogan, not a good one. I think that kind of turned some people off. Just a feud, and you know, it's 8 years later after WrestleMania VI. It just didn't really work out. It wasn't what they thought it was going to be. It spiked the rating for a bit, but then it kind of just died off.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll just run through real quick. There's some Sunday Night Heat matches before the pay-per-view starts. Steve Blackman defeated Bradshaw in 3 minutes. The Oddities, Giant Silva, Golga, and Kurgan with Luna Vachon, Shaggy 2-Dope, and Violent J of the Insane Clown Posse defeated the Los Boricuas, Jose Jesus, and Miguel. That match went 2 minutes, 30 seconds. The Godfather with two random hoes defeated Farouk in 2 minutes, and Scorpio defeated Jeff Jarrett in 3 minutes and 45 seconds. Just quick, short matches here on Heat. Just interesting to note that Jeff Jarrett and Farouk both losing on Heat here. Does that mean that they're in the doghouse? I mean, what's kind of the thought process there?
What were the matches again, bro?
So Scorpio defeated Jeff Jarrett via roll-up in 3 minutes and 45 seconds, and the Godfather defeated Farouk in 2 minutes. Were they headed towards getting de-pushed here?
Man, I don't know about that. That's strange. Who beat Farouk again?
The Godfather.
Yeah, see, that I could understand because they Vince loved The Godfather. He loved that whole gimmick and this, that, and the other thing. Godfather was tight with Taker, so he was in a really good spot. So that I can kind of see. But Jarrett losing to
Gold Scorpio.
Yeah, that's odd, bro. That's odd. I honestly don't remember, bro. I honestly don't remember.
I know it's via roll-up, and he will come out during the pay-per-view, but it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I wonder if Jarrett wasn't too...
I wish I could remember, bro, but I can't.
And I know Bradshaw and Farouk both losing eventually will come back, and they'll be the acolytes. So, I mean, it's kind of like they needed maybe a change.
Yeah, that's very quite possible, yeah.
So let's start the pay-per-view. Al Snow with head, of course, versus Mark Merrow with Jacqueline. Al Snow gets the win in 7 minutes and 10 seconds. Jeff Jarrett does come out in this and try to interfere on behalf of Merrow. Doesn't quite work out, and Al Snow still gets the win with the snowplow. What do you think here of Al Snow and head starting off the pay-per-view with a win?
Yeah. I mean, bro, big pop coming out. You know what I'm saying? Al was very, 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 very entertaining. You know, Mero was great. You know, I mean, very, very, very underrated in my opinion. So, this I think is a exciting, entertaining match that will get the people up from the get-go. That's what I think. You know, Mero had a lot of heat back then with Jackie. Everybody loved Al and Al's gimmick. So I think this is a good opening match.
When you look at Al Snow and Head in this gimmick, is there a ceiling to it? Do you think it could go like higher? Do you think it's upper mid card? Do you think it's main event? Like, what do you think about this gimmick with Al Snow and Head? I know he is super over, but where do you think it can go?
I don't have any caps on anybody, bro. Like I'm listening to the people and I'm looking at the ratings. So if the people and the ratings are in an upward projection for Al, then I'm just plugging along with Al, bro. So I don't have any cap or any limitations on this whatsoever.
I know Vince McMahon loves to talk about the glass ceiling. Let's be honest, though. Is there really a glass ceiling in his mind with some of the guys? Or if the guy gets over, he'll push him to the moon?
Now, his philosophy is different than mine. There is definitely a glass ceiling in his mind. He'll look at a person and, you know, just physical appearance alone will dictate to Vince McMahon where he thinks that person will go.
I was just reading something interesting, and I know you have a fondness for AJ Styles, and I'm sure everyone else does too, but that when Vince first saw him, I guess Triple H was kind of the one that really wanted to bring him in. Vince was like, oh, this is him. They weren't even going to give him that theme music, which kind of fits him perfectly. It was just interesting. He put him in a thing. He's like, oh, you're like a little pit bull or whatever. Like his thing for shorter people that can wrestle is like he calls him pit bull or something.
Bro, it's like Vince didn't care about good workers, bro. He didn't care. That was not on Vince's radar. What was on Vince's radar were attractions and draws and people that were larger than life. That was on Vince's radar, not how good a wrestler they were. It doesn't matter who it is, bro. Those guys were outside of Sean. And I wouldn't even say Brett, bro, because Brett, here's what people don't understand, bro. Brett and Sean were not small guys. They weren't, bro. No. You know, I mean, they both look, you know, I mean, bro, there were a lot of wrestlers in that category, that size. You had Sean, you had Brett, you had Kurt Hennig, you had Roddy Piper. There were a lot of wrestlers that were in that size. But, you know, as far as, you know, good hands and people that could work and people that could go, bro, that wasn't Vince's forte, bro. It never was, man.
Yeah, it's interesting. He turned around on AJ, saw him wrestle a little bit, saw him cut a few promos, obviously, on WWE TV, and then he started to like him. But that just shows you, right? Vince doesn't watch any other
wrestling. No, and bro, I guarantee you Vince started to like AJ because AJ was AJ. You can't know AJ and not like him. So I guarantee you the longer he worked for Vince and the longer Vince got to know him, that's what made Vince like AJ. It had nothing to do with the work or anything like that. I'm sure he really liked him as a human being.
What did Vince think about Mark Merrow? Because remember, he got the second ever guaranteed contract. I guess Pillman got the first. He got the second one from Vince. Like, he doesn't usually give out guaranteed contract. What did Vince think of Mero? I mean, he must have liked him a lot.
Well, he really liked, because keep in mind at that time, you know, Rena had never been on television. So they both went to his office when they were meeting and negotiating. So Vince saw Rena for the first time. And I think Vince immediately saw them as a package and, you know, just thought, you know, Rena's looks were, you know, just exotic. And, you know, so I think, you know, he was meeting with Mero, but then Rena was there, and I think immediately he thought of them as a package.
All right, the next match up, LOD 2000, Animal Hawk and Draz versus the Disciples of Apocalypse, 8-Ball, Skull, and Paul Ellering. LOD 2000 gets the win in 5 minutes here. Interesting to note that Draz gets the pinfall, but he's not the legal man, and this pissed off Hawk. He thought he stole his victories, thought he stole his win. What do you think here, LOD 2000 with Draz? Did you like this gimmick? Did you think that Draz is going to replace Hawk? What do you think?
I'm just kind of surprised at the finish because, you know, Hawk was having his problems, bro. And I guarantee you the reason Draws was kind of put in that threesome was to send a message to Hawk that if you don't straighten out, there's somebody right next to you ready to take your spot. 1,000%. That's how they work, bro. Like, that's how the WWE does things, bro. So literally on his own team, they're reminding Hawk, either get your shit together or there's somebody right here that could take your place.
Did you think Draws would be a good replacement in LOD? No. I mean, the greatest tag team of all time, arguably.
No, not at all. Never. No. Nothing against Draws, but like you said, bro, they were the greatest tag team of all time. He could not have replaced Hawk. No.
Do you think that, like you said, like they're doing that to the Hawk's face. Do you think they're saying anything to Hawk? Like, hey, man, this guy's your replacement. Or is it just so obvious that, like, it's going to be
they're sending a message. Sending a message, brother. That's what they're all about. Sending a message, man. When they do it to this day, when Orton is giving the RKO to Nick Aldis, they are sending a message. They are testing Nick to see if Nick is going to say anything, to see... They still do that, bro, to this day.
Really? That's why you think he did it to Aldis? I thought it was the old 1,000%. I know. I thought it was the old Stone Cold Steve Austin, DTA. Remember, he used to stunner everybody for no reason.
1,000%. I promise you, bro, when Nick went out there, he knew nothing about it. Now, towards the end, he might have been smartened up by the referee or Orton himself, but I guarantee you when he went out there, he had no idea that that was going to happen.
Wow. Okay. That didn't even cross my mind.
Bro, Pritchard had an issue with Nick for years, bro. Yeah. Pritchard was the one keeping Nick out of. So now think about it, bro. Pritchard's been keeping Nick Aldis out of WWE for years. All of a sudden now Triple H comes along and wants to put him in. And that's what they're going to do. You know, that's what Pritchard's going to do to test him. Let's test him and see how he reacts to this. Bro, Nick Aldis went on Twitter the next day and said, man, they were right. The RKO totally comes out of nowhere. He's telling you, I had no idea. He's telling you, I had no idea this was coming.
And then the next week, Orton gave him a check. Did you see
and that? How ridiculous. How horrible was that, bro? This guy drops you with an RKO. He walks in your office the next week and you ain't going to do nothing. Come on, man. This is the game they play, John. It continues to go on.
And he gave him a check for 100 grand. He said, the fine was only for 50. He's like, that's for the next one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they don't even let Nick Aldis say something like, yeah, you go ahead and try that. Nothing, bro. Totally cut his freaking balls off. That's what they do, bro.
But he's just a general manager. He's not supposed to be a wrestler.
No, it doesn't matter. Bro, Pritchard didn't want him there. He didn't want him there. For years and years and years, he didn't want him there.
What was the issue with them? That he didn't like him? Was it
stemming from TNA? If you don't know Nick, he can come across as very condescending, chip on his shoulder, cocky, arrogant. That's how the dude comes across until you really get to know him. So first impression, I guarantee you, that's how Bruce felt.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Do you think that he should be wrestling, given the fact that
he's
6'4", 255?
Yeah, you know, he's jacked. He definitely will be wrestling, yeah.
Will he be wrestling Randy Orton? That's the question.
Probably.
Next up here, we have Christian with Gangrel versus Taka Michinoku with Yamaguchi-san, your buddy Yamaguchi-san, for the WWF Light Heavyweight Championship. Christian defeats Taka Michinoku in 8 minutes, 30 seconds to win the Light Heavyweight Championship. Pretty good match here. Do you hate the Light Heavyweight Championship? I know you do.
Yeah, of course I do. Yeah. Yeah, that was their, you know, trying to match WCW with their light heavyweight division. Yeah, I hated it.
Do you like the brood here? Because Edge is watching in the crowd. You kind of don't know what's going on with him, but obviously Christian is with Gangrel. You got the brood really kind of coming on strong. Do you like that trio, if you will?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, definitely. I'm definitely a fan of the three of them. Definitely. Yeah.
Taka Michinoku, Yamaguchi-san doesn't do anything for you? Kai
and Tai? Not really.
What about when you
was this? Was this before or after the angle with Val?
I'm trying to think about that. This is before, I believe. I think that's coming up.
Before, but Taka is a heel. No,
now he is. Yeah, he's just about to be a heel. Yeah,
I think it's after. It is after. It definitely is after. Yeah. Because I'm watching the Attitude Era now, and we're getting into the stuff with Val and Yamaguchi-san, and Christian he's not even in the picture yet.
Okay. And his wife. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just interesting that the light heavyweight championship obviously created because of the cruiserweight championship. Do you put any sort of extra effort like in putting storylines? Because you know the cruiserweight division is a lot more match based.
Oh yeah, I was trying to put storylines, bro. I definitely was trying to put storylines. And bro, on the other side of that, the arrangement with Japan might have been ending. You know what I'm saying, bro? These may have been contractually Taka's last days. I can't remember that, but it's very possible that his deal could have been running up.
Do you think that division really like ever had a chance to do anything? Like, was Vince really going to put a lot of effort into it?
No, Vince wasn't into it.
Because it seems like to me, it's like, okay, Christian versus Taka, but there's not a lot of juice.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. No, Vince wasn't into the light heavyweight stuff for the reasons I just told you.
So you're right. The Val Venus Taka Michinoku stuff was before.
Yeah.
Before this. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, that was so funny. Oh my God. Yamaguchi-san. Whose idea was that, by the way?
I'm watching that now where he just noticed the woman in the front row, but he doesn't know it's Yamaguchi-san's wife. I'm just watching that now.
where does that storyline come from? And you bringing in John Wayne Bobbitt and stuff.
Just to enhance the character, bro. That's it. Just to enhance the character.
With that stuff, I mean, obviously, it's so memorable. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily they're going to have a great match, but everybody remembers Choppy Choppy, your peepee, and
right,
and Bobbitt, and that whole controversy, and his wife, obviously, what she did. Yeah, so it's all memorable stuff.
Oh yeah, because bro, at that time, that Bobbitt stuff, people forget. You know, they'll look at that today, and you know, Russo, this, that, and the other thing. Not having a clue, bro, because many of them probably weren't even born. That Bobbitt thing was a huge deal back then, bro. That was on the news every single night. So of course, when you look at it today, you're gonna look at it. Oh, that was stupid. This, that, and the other thing. Bro, back then it was headline news. So getting the dude on the show helped our ratings, man. Everybody was talking about that. Bro, she freaking cut his wiener off and threw it out the window. They had to go look for it. Everybody was talking about that, yeah, man. Yeah. And then to have Lawler interview him. Come on, man. Like, seriously. So that's why, yeah, man, you could look at that 25 years later, but you don't understand what was happening at the time.
Definitely a different time period, for sure.
But yes.
You got to bring stuff from the mainstream into wrestling. It brings you extra attention.
And, bro, think about it. You know, the guy had no money. So he's not going to cost you anything. You know what I mean, bro? He's going to be happy to do it for whatever you pay him. But like I said, you know, you look at that 25 years later, you're not understanding the time and what was going on, you know?
Yep. Next matchup, Goldust defeats Val Venus with Terry Reynolds in about 12 minutes. Interesting to note here, Goldust before the match is saying, I told you I was coming back to Val Venus. Remember, he had left for a while. You didn't know what was going on with Goldust. And then he comes back. Terry Reynolds, of course, hates Goldust, said she ruined his life. She tries to help Val Venus win for not. Goldust nails him with the Shattered Dreams and gets the victory. You like the the kind of, I guess, real life issue with Terry and Goldust playing factor?
I mean, not that I liked it, bro, but whenever there's, you know, real life issues going on, the performance is going to be better, bro. The performance is going to be better, bro. When I cut that promo on Hulk Hogan, I was genuinely pissed off at him because, bro, why would you say 2 days ago that you agree to this and now 2 hours before the show you don't? That's what I was pissed off about, because if he would have came back with the second draft and said, that doesn't work for me, brother, then I would have wrote a third draft and a fourth draft. But to let me know literally hours before the show, that's what I was pissed off with him about. But that's why I said, bro, when there's real anger and a real issue, you got the audience there saying, holy shit, man, I think this is real. You know what I'm saying? So anytime as a writer you have a shred of that, you try to use it.
Did you think that Dustin pulled off the Dustin Runnels, I'm religious, he's coming back, Jesus thing?
That was bad, bro. And that's creative. That was not Dustin's fault, bro. That's probably where Dustin was at the time. But when as I'm watching that back now on Russo's brand, I don't like that at all. So that's the creative. That's not on him. Bro, it was so hard to try to recover from what to do with Dustin when they stripped Goldust of him. It was so difficult to top that. You were never going to top that. So that stuff, no, bro, I was not a fan of. And, you know, that was me trying to figure out what to do with them, but I wasn't a fan of that.
Do you like him taking shots at his dad and doing stuff like that, like being super controversial?
Yeah, that's where he was at that time, bro. Like, that was him. Like, that was really him. That wasn't us saying, you know, cut promos on your dad. That was where he was at that time in his relationship with his dad.
What a great character. Obviously one of the greatest wrestlers. He's awesome, but what a great character.
Yeah. And always, bro, that dude was always in everybody's good graces. You know what I mean, bro? So everybody was always behind Dustin Rhodes. Everybody, bro, all the time, bro. That's why we were trying so hard to figure out, you know, what the next, you know, creation of him was going to be, you know?
Yep. So up next, X-Pac with China defeats D'Lo Brown for the WWF European Championship. The match goes 14 minutes and 30 seconds. Pretty damn good match here.
That's what I'm saying. Just by you talking about this, I'm envisioning this being a real good match.
D'Lo, one of those guys, I don't know, under the radar, great hand, great wrestling. Obviously, X-Pac is great. Yeah. So one of those things where, I don't know, I guess for pay-per-views, just have a longer, good match that the people that are buying the pay-per-views are going to enjoy.
Bro, no doubt. If I look at, you know, most underrated of people that I work with, D'Lo's in top three. I mean, no question about it, bro. No, Mero's up there with me. And definitely D'Lo is up there with me. Yes.
Also teasing here, X-Pac does get the win, but teasing the China Mark Henry love interest. What did you think about that?
That was fun, bro. That was so fun to do because it was so outside of, you know, who they were up until that point. So you're totally seeing a new side of Mark Henry. You're totally seeing a new side of China. These are the things, bro, that make characters three-dimensional and make you care about them. These are those things.
When you look at it, Mark Henry is going to be in a match later on, but was he in line for some sort of maybe push here? Because it seems like he's getting some more TV time. Like they're able to show.
Not really, bro. He's getting more TV time because he's entertaining and people are enjoying it. That's why he's getting more TV time.
Not necessarily a push or anything like
that. Yeah, no.
When you look at China at this point, are you seeing that there's more to her, like as far as her character? Like, hey, we could do more with her than just the bodyguard that stands there and looks like a
billion bucks. Absolutely, bro. Definitely 1,000%. Absolutely. Yes.
How do you get it, like a sense of it? Because is she doing something backstage? Is she doing something on the house shows? How are you guys getting a sense of her, like the other side, her entertainment side?
I think it's a combination of two things, bro. I think it's a combination of, number one, everybody likes her. Everybody liked Chyna backstage. Everybody. And you know, bro, she was a professional, and whatever we gave her, she got over. So when something like that's happening, man, you just got to keep giving more and more and more and see how she does.
Mark Henry and her obviously would have a lot of interesting interactions. And it was just, it's one of those things where they're both kind of blossoming. And it's like, wow, they maybe can be more entertainers, which is what WWE fans and the casual fans want.
Just take them to the next level, bro. That's it. Take them to the next level.
When you look at China at this point, obviously it's almost like she's nothing but more and more TV time. I mean, she's gonna become a definite bigger part of the show, even more than X-Pac coming up. Like, she's gonna be becoming more the star of the group. I mean, Triple H separate, but DX is almost like she's using that and getting herself up the mountaintop,
because she was unique, she was different, she looked like a star, and she was very, very well protected.
Yeah, well said. So next up is an interesting one. The Headbangers, Bosch and Thrasher, versus the New Age Outlaws, Billy Gunn and the Road Dogg, for the WWF Tag Team Championship. So it doesn't seem like doing much with the Headbangers here in 98. Seems like New Age Outlaws, which we talked about before, are getting a pretty big push. I know you said Vince was behind them and everything else. So the Headbangers end up winning this match by disqualification. The match actually goes 14 minutes, so you get a long match here. They lose because Billy Gunn gets seen by the ref hitting Thrasher with a weapon. So it's one of those things that, with that, remember that giant boombox thing that you guys always had and would break? It's actually kind of a cool gimmick, because it just looks like, oh my god, that boombox exploded. Why Headbangers? I mean, it's a DQ, but why not have the Outlaws just go over straight up?
Just to keep it for a couple of reasons, bro. You know, again, these two guys were very, very well liked. Very well liked. Team players, bro. Very well liked. Never complained about anything. But this is just a way to keep it going. You know, that's all, bro. It's just a way to keep the feud going. The fact that now the Headbangers have a win over them, but it wasn't a 1-2-3. So it's just a way to kind of keep the feud going.
And of course, the championship does not change hands on a DQ. Right. So the Outlaws are still the tag team champions.
Right.
Interesting. I remember some point in 97 when LOD came back to the WWF at the Manhattan Center, they wrestled the Headbangers, and even in their return, the LOD didn't get the straight up win. It was like a count out or something. I was like, wow, like the Headbangers are so well protected. Like, why wouldn't LOD in their big return get the win?
They were well liked, bro. They, you know, again, being team players, man, knowing their role, they were really well liked.
They are super nice guys.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like underrated team, too. They were always pretty good to me anyway in ring. And they had like a cool gimmick to kind of, you know, especially in that time period.
Yeah.
And I just saw an interview saying that they were saying, somebody was like, oh, you should be in the Hall of Fame. And they were like, well, there's like a million people that should be in the Hall of Fame before us. So they're humble, too. They're not going to be like, So, yeah, I like those guys. Interesting gimmick. Did you ever see more out of them, or it's just, you know, tag team division?
Bro, it was just, there were just so many. We talk about this all the time. There were just so many guys that were just so over. You know what I mean, bro? There's only so much room at the top, man. You know, that's what made it difficult. Today, those guys would probably be like a number one tag team, you know, without a shadow of a doubt. But back then, man, with everything you had going on, it was just tough.
I remember at one point, Mosh was teaming with D'Lo later on, and then he was Beaver Cleavage, which I'm sure was your idea, right?
I think the tall one was Glenn, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I think he had some problems, bro. He was having some problems back then, and that's why we spun. What was the other one's name?
Mosh. Chaz, if you
will. Chaz, yeah, that's why we kind of spun him out. There was some personal problems there.
Beaver Cleavage was an interesting gimmick. Didn't go too far, but pretty interesting. Was that your idea, Beaver Cleavage?
Yeah, it was my idea. And again, bro, again, rather than let it play out, oh, bro, him and his mother are having sex. Bro, she was never his mother, okay? That was the story. It was very, very gold dustish. But of course, oh, he's doing his mother. No, bro, he was never doing his mother. So, of course, that never got the chance to play out.
Next up, Ken Shamrock, the WWF Intercontinental Champion, defeats Mankind in 14 minutes and 30 seconds. Really, really good match here. What did you think here? Shamrock going over Mankind, who's, was in the midst of a pretty big push. That's a big win for Shamrock, but is that a down push?
Mick was bulletproof, bro. Mick didn't need a title. It didn't matter if you beat Mick. He was so unique and so great, bro, and would play three different characters. Mick was, bro, about as bulletproof as they get. Put a microphone in his hand. It doesn't matter, bro. He was bulletproof.
It's an interesting finish here. Howard Finkel kind of announces Shamrock won due to the mandible claw. Incensed at this, Shamrock kicked Mankind, suplexed the referee. At one point, Mankind put Mr. Sacco and applied the mandible claw before leaving the ring. I don't know. It's just a weird thing. It's just, are you trying to keep him strong? Because obviously heading into Survivor Series, Foley is getting, you know, he's going to be back towards the top of the card. He's trying to kiss Vince's ass. Remember, he shaves and, you know what I mean? Is it almost one of those things where he's trying to be like a sympathetic character? You're like, you're trying to get him some sympathy here?
Yeah, well, you definitely are trying to protect him, bro. I mean, you know, see, that's the thing today, bro. It's like they don't protect anybody. It's 50-50 booking. They outright beat people every week, and they're not creative to protect the person that's been beaten, so he just loses. Obviously, bro, you know, Mick is a major, major player. So even if we want Shamrock to go over in the process, we're going to protect Mick and his character as much as we can.
Foley here is so funny because he's trying to get back in Vince's good graces, trying to kiss his ass. Remember, he's dressing up in the suit. They give him that eventually you guys give him that hardcore title. You know what I mean? And Vince is kissing his ass. Obviously, it's all a ruse on him. He's just a gullible. Like, he's looking for Vince to be his father figure, right, and he's trying to kiss his ass, and Vince is letting him fall for it. So, like, you guys are putting, like, a ton of sympathy on him. It's just like, oh, man, like, we love this guy, but, oh, why is he falling for this millionaire, billionaires?
And, bro, what else was tied into that? What else was tied into that was there was a period of that storyline where he was looking for Paul Bearer to be his dad. So, like, that's what I'm talking about, bro, when it comes to layers of character. This guy is looking for love. He's looking for guidance. He even goes to Paul Bearer, then Vince McMahon. But that's what adds layers to a character, bro.
Keeping him strong there towards the end, for sure. Heading into Survivor Series, where Dwayne Gill makes his return and fights Foley in the first round, which is great because then – obviously, it seems like, wow, Vince is really setting up this tournament for Foley to win here. Like, what the hell's going on? So, and here is the other part of that as far as leading up to Survivor Series, which you love to say, the swerve, bro, the swerve. The Rock is a babyface here, and he's fighting Mark Henry. So the nation's splitting up, and he's going to fight Mark Henry in the next match. So what you think heading into the tournament is, all right, Foley is Vince's golden boy. This is the guy he's going to line up to win the tournament. And you're thinking The Rock has no chance. Their boss man is going to try to take him out early in the tournament. Like and you swerved it and obviously reversed it. You were messing with Foley. Vince was messing with Foley. Rock was the golden boy. He's playing.
Yeah, Vince was playing him, bro. That's it. That's the story.
Pretty shocking here. Mark Henry defeats The Rock in the next match in about 5 minutes, thanks to D'Lo Brown's cheating. What did you think here? Obviously, a few weeks later, The Rock gets his win back on Monday Night Raw. But what are you thinking here? Trying to get him over as like the sympathetic babyface before the big heel turn for The Rock?
Probably, yeah, bro. Probably to get the people behind him. So screwing him in the match, you're going to get the people behind him. The more people we can get behind him, the more impact that swerve is going to have. Absolutely.
You guys already thinking at this point, Austin Rock, like that's going to be the big feud coming up, because it seems like Rock is definitely getting that big push, and obviously Austin is the man. I mean, he's
yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah.
When the main event comes around, it's for the vacant WWF Championship. Now we know, because we were talking about it last month, Undertaker and Kane double pinned Austin. McMahon takes the belt. He didn't announce a title. He didn't announce a champion because Kane and Undertaker kind of screwed him. Maybe he, so, you know, he thought they were going to help him. They had no interest in helping him as the Brothers of Destruction. So now what he does, he books them a match against each other, and he makes Austin the referee. He said if Austin does a call it down the middle and basically count to three and we get a champion, get a winner, Austin will be fired on the spot. Mm-hmm. So just an interesting little wrinkle here. Kane, Undertaker, for the vacant championship, Austin is the ref, but there must be a winner according to Vince. So do you like that lead in at least? Do you like,
oh, absolutely, bro. You're always trying to add stakes, bro. You're always trying to add stakes. I'm curious as to what happened.
Okay. So this match basically ends in a double pinfall. Austin takes out Kane. He takes out Undertaker, uses a chair, uses a stunner. He then does the double pin as they're both out. He doesn't pin them, but he does they're both out, 1, 2, 3, and says, match is over. And he says, you know what? I declare myself the winner and whatever. So obviously that not actually going to sit well with Vince McMahon, who they reveal is actually sitting above the entranceway with Boss Man with him. He's in his wheelchair from the injury from Kane and Undertaker from Raw. And, you know, which was awesome. What a awesome heel. He's in the wheelchairs getting wheeled around by Big Boss Man in like a hood. And he's his big security guard who he hired because he doesn't want to get beat up anymore. I need a bodyguard.
Right.
Perfect segue. Awesome way to bring back Boss Man. But do you like that? There's no winner at the end of the pay-per-view, right? I mean,
it's not about, bro, this is such a different time. It's not about the win. It's about the story. This is all about the story, bro. This is all about the journey and the ride, and the fans could care less that there wasn't a clean finish or a 1, 2, 3. All they care about is what are they going to do on Raw tomorrow? How is Vince going to react? That's all they cared about, bro.
Austin was true to form. He said that's exactly what he was going to do. You know what I mean? Take them out. Paul Bearer actually comes out and tries to interfere, and he thinks for Kane's behalf. He actually hits Kane, kind of turning on Kane. Does kind of all for naught there, but just interesting with where Bearer's going. Bearer's kind of going maybe away, maybe more with Taker, but yeah, he's mad at Kane because Kane and Taker are talking again. It's an interesting little wrinkle with Paul Bearer there as well.
Yeah, you don't know where it's going, bro. That's the key, man. That is the key. If you don't know where it's going, you got to watch it, man.
So Larry was, he said he was upset that there was no winner in the match. He felt like there was like a swerve or a screw job as far as not getting a winner. You're saying it doesn't matter because you have to watch Raw the next night. It's part of the TV program. Just get it episodically.
Absolutely, bro. And what Austin did is exactly what he would have done. That's exactly what he would have done. Vince McMahon puts him in that position. He's not going to let Vince get the best of him. You know the end of this is going to be a big F you to Vince. That's what Austin's going to do. But now you got to see how Vince is going to react. So a win here, you know, no disrespect to Larry, but a win here means absolutely nothing. This is exactly what Austin would have done.
So Austin is looking for Vince. He's saying, fire me, fire me. Where is this guy? He says he's going to fire me. They show Vince. He's up on above the entranceway there. And he basically says, I've been here. I've been sitting up, you know, up in the box. Basically, Austin, you screwed me. You didn't do what I told you to do. I told you I was going to fire you. So he says, screw you. You're fired. Right then and there. So then you're thinking to yourself, what the hell? I can't believe Austin or McMahon actually did it. He actually fired Austin. What do you think? I mean, and obviously you have to watch next night because you're like,
of course. What? Yeah. What? No, of course.
Fired, bro. Austin can't do that.
Bro, here's the difference, man. Everybody's staying true to character. Everybody's staying true to character because Austin did exactly what Austin would have done. And Vince McMahon, bro, as the owner of the company, he's not going to let Austin get one over on him. So he's basically giving him the big F you. I told you, you didn't listen to me. You're fired. Every character, bro, is acting like they would act. That's why I said, bro, you brought up this is the difference between now and then. You brought up the Nick Aldis gets RKO'd. The next week, Randy Orton walks in his office and Aldis is just looking for a check. No, bro. No. Oh, Aldis would be looking to freaking fight freaking Orton. That's what he would be looking to do. But they made him, you know, mamby-pamby, just give me your check. Oh, it's double the amount because you're going to do it to me again. Okay, that's not how Nick Aldis would act. That's the problem, bro. So it's just so important and so key to stay true to everybody's character.
I love it, though. The screen is down. The screen goes up. And Vince goes, I want you to see me when I do this to you. And Austin's here at the entranceway. He says, everybody should take a picture and commemorate this moment because it's the last time you're going to see Stone Cold Steve Austin at the WWE.
That's awesome.
And he goes, you're fired. You fire them.
How do you not watch the next night?
Right, you have to, because it's like, wait a second, there's no Austin. Austin has to be on. And you know he's going to do something. So, of course, Austin says, you haven't seen the last of me. As Boss Man takes Vince and rolls him away, you haven't seen the last of me. You're like, oh, shit, Vince is in trouble. What is he going to do to him now? He's fired, but you know he's going to show up.
Yep. That's what's missing, bro. Yeah.
So, overall, though, you like the show because episodically, you have to watch Raw the next night.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, man, just you laying out the matches to me again. I mean, it just seems like there was some really good matches on this show.
Yeah, this was one of those things. Sometimes during the Attitude Era, it was almost like a lot more story than good matches. Yeah, but there's actually this one is kind of a little bit of a combination. It was good matches and good story.
Yeah. Sounds like a good show.
Yeah, definitely. The Attitude Era was definitely blossoming. And this is kind of the October, really, of 98. It's really when you see, like, there was no 50-50 WCW, WWF. Towards the end of the month, it just goes total WWF, and then you guys just take over from there.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
All right, so let's hit the plugs. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check the website, tmptempire.com. Vince, what do you got?
Yeah, guys, if you've never been a member of our Patreon program, right now you can go to patreon.com/RussoTWC. And you can get a free week of the brand, bro. It will cost you absolutely nothing. Just go to patreon.com/RussoTWC. Take advantage of the free week.
All right. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. See you right back here next time. Have a good one, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.